Michael Oliver, I'm so excited to be able to visit with you this morning. And one of the things I think is really, books have very interesting titles, many of them, and how to sell network marketing without fear or anxiety or losing your friends. And a subtitle, or part of that, if I remember, is selling from the soul. I think that is really something amazing. And when I was in my younger days, that was the furthest thing from my mind. Sometimes I think, I don't know what I want to do for sure, but it's certainly not selling. And that's actually happened to be pretty much my lifelong career is sales. And I just think about you. I think about my good friend Ken Hankins, who that's his favorite book. He always talked about you, and he's one of the most successful people I know in this area. Amazing, but that was his textbook, was your book. And I just acknowledge you as an expert, and everybody I know will gain some ahas and some golden nuggets from the call that we have today. So it's just a pleasure to have you on, and thanks for doing this for us. And I'll just turn it over to you and kind of guide us in this exciting moment.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's what I like doing. You know, it's my passion. So turning up whenever, wherever is perfect. So I have to give you a definition. You call me an expert. I was always reminded by my late father, who said that the definition of an expert is X is what was, and spurt is a drip under pressure. So it's a term that I'm pretty cautious about. Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, I would say how to sell network marketing without fear or anxiety or losing your friends.
Yeah, so let's turn that around a bit, because the book that you're referring to, which bestseller, if I was to rewrite that, and I wrote that 20 years ago, if I was to rewrite that, I would adjust the title a bit into how to buy network marketing without fear, anxiety, or losing your friends, which is really the theme that I've been teaching for and training and coaching on for the last 10 years, which is not so much how to sell, because selling has a certain connotation, but how to help people buy, and that's sort of the theme. How to help people buy what it is that you're offering, whether it's a product or a service. And I think you'll agree, it probably throws a little bit of a different energy and a different light on it. It's a little bit more precise.
Well, nobody likes to be sold, but everybody likes to buy, and so that's a good psychological position out there.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, people do hate the idea of selling. And here's the challenge, though, in network marketing especially, is that, I think you put it on your little blurb that went out, is that while well-meaning, you know, most network marketers are taught to tell their story and talk about their products and services basically as soon as they can. And as soon as they get a kind of a slight pulse from everyone, then start hammering them, you know, towards the fact that why their products or services are good for them, and sending them to websites and all that sort of thing. And the usual result, as we know, is rejection and objections. And coming with that is a huge amount of tension and friction. And when I'm talking about tension and friction, I'm talking about tension from the point of view of the distributor, the consultant in our case, and friction between two people, you know, and a lot of people have lost friends over that by hammering away with them, and we know that for a fact. And so to do that is and being taught to do that is, in my mind, a myth. In fact, I was looking through the notes of a book I've been threatening to write now for many years, which is, you know, the myths of network marketing, and I've got 63 of them so far. So I think I might release that just for a bit of fun. But, you know, but approaching and talking with potential customers and partners and getting no resistance or dissolving any resistance and getting no tension is really easy if you stop telling or educating or explaining as soon as you can, and instead start asking and listening. And more specifically, start asking, and this is really critical here, the right types of questions at the right time. That's really what it's all about. So types is really important. It's not about questions. It's about the types of questions you're asking. Some are logical. Some are emotional. Some are subjective. They reach inside a person's heart, if you like. And the other part is start listening. And specifically, again, start listening to what is being meant as well as what is being said. And the two words to hang on to here are meant and said. Meant is subjective. It's personal. It's value-based. And it's unique. It's unique to them. So where they're coming from, if they answer a question, what they're meaning is very unique to them. And again, it's very personal. It's very subjective. And it's value-based. The said is logical. So if I asked you a question, said, you know, so what would make a change in your life? You said, have a bit more money. You know, a lot of people jump on that and say, I can show you how to do that. And the reason is because we're very solution-oriented. We jump right in with our solutions. And the minute we do that, boom, the resistance goes up because people have been there, done that, and the kids have done the same thing. And so the reply, which is more money, wanting more money, is a very logical reply. And people buy more based on what? Emotional logic. Over to you.
Oh, well, I think pretty much we think we're logic, but I would say pretty much everything is emotion. And we use logic to justify our emotions, I would say, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
and so that sort of is the crux of it. And if you come with the right intention, and that's another key, you come with the right intention, asking the right types of questions at the right time, listening to what is being meant as well as what is being said, and knowing how to respond. Okay, will reveal and your potential customers or people you're talking with will reveal quite willingly their unique buying blueprint. They'll lay it out for you like a menu in a restaurant. It'll all be laid out for you, but you have to get out of your own way, and you have to let them tell you what to say to make a winning presentation every time, or not. I mean, you're not going to make a winning presentation every time, because what you have to offer is of no interest to some people, and that's fine. You know, and what you have to offer is sort of something we can talk about. And so that's it. It's the essential skills that anyone can master. I don't care whether you're what kind of four types of personalities or variation of personalities. You can master it. And here's the key. You know, the reason why selling is so fearful for so many people is because selling was created by a small minority of a certain personality type. They happen to be driver personalities, which comprise about 15-17% of the population. They wrote the rules. And the rules work for them because they don't care. They'll drive. They'll go for it. They'll go, you know, and that's the way. And, you know, God bless them. That's whatever works, as long as it doesn't hurt somebody. And that's where I'm coming from, which is a little bit of a judgment, but that's where I'm coming. Don't hurt people. Don't hurt things, you know. But those rules don't work for the other 85% of the people. And so that turns the other 85% off. And those 85% can actually do better than the 15%, the driver personalities, by thinking and by changing their thinking, and by that will change their approach and the way they talk with people. They can do far better. Analytical people, for example, are amazing at being able to do what I call natural selling, or using natural selling conversational dialogue, which is really what this is all about, natural selling conversational dialogue. And so they can get amazing results, and they do. And you can create whatever income you like, on the basis of rethinking what you think about selling, and which will rethink your way as to how to approach and talk with people. Okay, that's it. We can finish now.
Okay, thanks, everybody. that is such powerful stuff, and I think that I, in my own mind, I always kind of think natural selling is this idea that I often believe, and probably everyone has said this at some time or another, is a, well, if I could believe in this, if I could believe in something, I could sell it. And at that point, it really ceases to be selling. Because I've heard this statement that, or joke, I guess, that this salesman came to a farmer, and he sold him 3 milking machines, and he only had 1 cow. And he took the cow as a down payment. And I think that's kind of the classic thought of what some people might think that sales is getting people to do something that's not beneficial to them, that's mm-hmm. self-serving. But if you really think of selling as service, and I like the idea that it's essentially just being able to help people see something that will make them better because of what you're doing. You would never dream of doing something that was a disadvantage or taking advantage of another person. And I think that maybe might be kind of the organic natural sales is just sharing from the heart. And also one of my favorite things when I first got into sales, I wanted to be an electrical engineer, then the Navy, and then just a couple of years the Navy cured me of any love I had for electronics. And I had a friend getting out, and he was going into outside sales, straight commission. And I remember just thinking, well, that's one thing I know I don't want to do. But as we kept in touch, all of a sudden, 6 months later, he moved into a brand new house and he was making more than an electrical engineer. And I remember thinking of my buddy. I thought, you know, I love Doug. He's a good person, but, you know, he's really not that smart. If he could do that, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could get out of the Navy and 6 months later move into a new house. And one of the things that he talked about was just going around calling on businesses, and I first heard this idea that it's just making friends with people, and if people need something anyway and they like you, maybe they'd get it from you, and that was just one of the big revelations. And as I went out, if I just kind of went, hi, I'm Dave Johnson with Northwestern Industrial Lamps, light bulbs. Do you need any light bulbs? Oh, I don't think so, and I was done. But learning skills was a big thing, but so much of it was just asking questions and finding the right people to talk to and taking some time to get to know people. And
you said,
it became very fun.
Yeah, you said a couple of things there. You know, that you have to believe in your product. You know, I'm quite contrary. I have been for the last 23 years, you know, while training and specifically training thousands of network marketers around the world, is that there are people who sell who don't love their product who are very successful. They just think it's a useful product. They don't even use it and whatever. You know, I mean, there are people who are selling, for example, Toyotas to drive around in Volkswagen. You know, they don't so to me, it's a matter of not necessarily loving it. It's useful. And in this case, you know, with regards to Nikan, you know, all the products really do help people. I can't really say they save lives, but they might well do. Maybe I can say it, but you can't. so that's sort of one aspect of it. And the other thing that you said, which was interesting, sort of went woof right out of my head, is about making friends. You and I have spoken about this before, and I have a contrary opinion to that, because a lot of times salespeople, network marketers, are told that it's all about creating relationships first. So I have trouble with that, because if you're trying to create a relationship first with the idea that you want to sell something, then what you're doing is just another part of manipulation. And it's really about you, not about them. It's about you getting what you want. And so it's to me that's not comfortable. Because at some stage...
Well, to me, it's very comfortable because I look at it as relationship marketing, and network marketing is different than selling a product. And we can, network marketing is building a team and being together for a long time and bulking a cause together. And so, to me, that's all relationship, like any successful organization.
Well,
that's the appealing thing to me. But
yeah, let me add on to that. Is that there's a difference, though, coming from a place of intention, building the relationship, an immediate relationship, the moment you open your mouth. So instead of blocking it off so that you're building relationships that you can talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, you do it all in one go, and you come from a place of intention, which is basically, and we can talk about this a little bit later, is about focusing on them to seeing if they have the types of problems that you might be able to help them solve. And within a very few number of questions, you can establish that very, very quickly, and also have the person leaning in and wanting to know more about you, because they feel your intention, which is they don't even know that you're necessarily going to bring up anything, but they can feel your intention. And at the same time, they begin to know, like, and trust you almost instantaneously. So it's almost like sort of job done. When we talk about in network marketing, and this is to help overcome this sort of aspect of selling as well, is that the major difference in network marketing is that you are selling something. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, for example, you've got three major products, which is, water, the duct tape, and health, mushrooms. I love that part. That's great.
Immunity.
Yeah, immunity. Well, immunity, yeah, but I like to think of those mushrooms.
Kind of key this up a little bit, Michael, in a little bit of show prep. He says, what are some favorite products that you might talk to people about? To capture your interest and so water, everybody's concerned about that. I like to call it prospecting tape, because it's just consistent, easy, wonderful results. And then immunity, wow, is anybody thinking about immunity right now? And we've got a really amazing immune formula. So
yeah.
So that's why you're mentioning that. So just throw that out.
Yeah, perfect. That's great. And those are great products to talk about if they're relevant. So let's talk about relevancy here. I gave you a question, which a question which you could pivot on, or you can ask someone right away. And it's one of 5 to 7 questions that can establish an immediate relationship with someone and to have them willingly give you their unique, logical, that's outer logical, and inner personal emotional buying blueprint. And the question is this, is that, if there is one thing you could change in your life right now, what would that be, if anything? Or if there's one thing you could change in your life right now, whether it's personal or professional, what would that be, if anything? And you could ask a friend that, yes, almost like a question you can ask right away. And if you think about it, that is a very, if you like, deep question. And you'll get basically an answer which will fall in about four categories. It's going to do with health, it's going to do with money, and in a sense it's going to do with time and freedom. And you might get all four, you might just get three, you might just get two. But if you can categorize those in your mind, that's sort of what you're listening for when you ask that type of question. And you could call up a friend right now. Anybody that's on the call could call up a friend right now and say, I was listening to this webinar the other day, and this guy asked a really interesting question, which got me thinking about what's important in my life. And I was curious. You and I have known each other for a long time. Let me ask you the same question. If there's one thing you could change in your life right now, that would make a huge difference in your life, whether it's professional or personal, what would that be, if anything? And you have to add the if anything on the end. And just listen. You don't have to go anywhere with it. Just try it with a couple of friends. And you'll be amazed at what they will tell you. And you'll hear, if you listen carefully, usually a logical reply, and sometimes you'll hear a more subjective, emotional reply, and sometimes you hear both. And that is, if you like, a key to understanding how to approach it. Well, you have to come from this place of intention. Because if you immediately sort of jump on them with a solution, you're basically doomed, you know, because it's, you know, you switched it from a focus on them to focus on you. So come from this place of this intention of really wanting to find out. Let's talk about, for example, the three main causes of rejection and objections. You want to do that?
Sure.
So, asking, what do you think is the greatest fear that holds most network marketers back, even salespeople back, from calling or following up with potential customers?
Well, somebody who's been doing this for 40 plus years, let me think. after all these years, it's still not fun to have somebody say no. You've got to kind of think, okay, this is part of the process, and fear of rejection. Nobody likes to be rejected, and you just got to learn not to take it personal. That you're offering something, and our job is to let people know about it, and your job is to make a decision, and just don't take it personal. But you do. Fear of rejection would be my.
So I'm going to suggest something here. Is that depending on how you approach that person? Is that you do take it personal. And I'll get to understanding what I mean in a second. So it's not great feeling rejected, is it? I mean, depending on who you are, you either feel tense, tight, feeling inadequate, holding back from making calls.
And also, the more you believe in something and the more you love that person you're sharing it with, and they say no, and you just know this would be good for them, and they say no, and you gotta respect their decision themselves. But
absolutely.
But there is still that.
Yeah. So, and you know, the feeling basically is different for all of us, but the end result is the same. We don't like the tension over it, and we don't like the feeling, if you like, which holds back. I don't. When I first started selling, I did all the standard sales stuff and did very well. I mean, I was the second largest solar salesperson in Los Angeles in the early 80s in the apartment building solar energy systems. But I hated every single minute of it. I'm going to get rid of that little noise in the background because there's some trucks coming by. 1 second. There we go. That makes it more comfortable.
Okay.
And I always felt that there had to be another way, and that's what set me on the course, a very comfortable way. You know, and a lot of people on the call, for example, you know, have you asked the question, have you ever been taught that rejection is part of selling and to expect it, get over it, every no gets you closer to a yes, and other cliches. And the chances are that you probably have. If you had, you might also have been taught things like, talk about your product or present your product as soon as you can. The ABCs, always be closing, close soon, close often. The more objections you can overcome, the more successful you'll be. I love that one. Getting rejected is not personal. It's only your potential customer asking for more information. Selling is the numbers game. I mean, there's a whole mass of those things out there. And it's true with this kind of sales model, it does make selling a numbers game. And it makes selling a numbers game from the point of view of plowing through as many customers as you can, or potential customers as you can. And the sad thing about the numbers game thinking, in a sense it's a numbers game, but I interpret it in a different way, but the standard sales model number, which is numbers game thinking, is it has a very heavy toll in emotional time and effort and money, and is too much for many salespeople and network marketers, and they hold back or won't do it. And it's not as though they can't do it, it's just they won't do it because it doesn't fit their personalities and style. And there's a reason for this, because it has to do with the unintended consequences of a standard sales model based on a fundamentally flawed thinking and approach. And it's a model that's inadvertently designed to fail most of the time. It's like flying from London to Los Angeles in a plane that has an 85% chance of not getting there. And the question is, would you do that? And I doubt that you would. And it's a model that is, and it's a thinking that is adversarial, it's uncomfortable, it creates tension, not only for us as salespeople, but more importantly for the people who are being approached as well. But you don't have to accept this anymore. You really don't have to accept this, because there's a much more comfortable way of talking with people and approaching with people. And it's a matter of rethinking what you think selling is about. And the first step is to understand that the fear of rejection is not the problem. Okay, the fear or tension is merely the symptom of a deeper and more important problem, and that is what is causing the fear. That is the problem. What is causing the fear? And identifying the cause means that you now have a choice. You can either continue what you're doing, which is whatever you want to do, or you can eliminate it, just get rid of it, or better still, you can eliminate it and change. You can change what you're thinking into something different, and you can change how you approach people and how you talk with people. You know, as an example, imagine having a headache, a recurring headache. You have a choice. You can either take an aspirin that will relieve the discomfort and last for a short period of time and then comes back again. Okay, so it's like selling. You can either, you know, try and toughen up your mind or get mentally tough or face the fear and do it anyway and all that sort of stuff, but it's always going to be there. You know, it's always going to be there. Or you can find the cause and take correct action to eliminate what the pain is happening. So it's say the headache, find the cause of the headache, and now you no longer have any headaches. And so it's really a sort of massive paradigm shift. Any comments about that, Dave?
Ultimately, all of this stuff we're saying, if you go into it, if you're going to make it, you got to talk to lots of people, and it all comes down to a numbers game. More people are probably going to say no than yes. I've got somebody asking, could you give maybe a conversation example? Maybe a role play. You've done really well. Can you think of an example and maybe just play it out?
So each conversation is unique to itself. Let me explain it this way, okay? Because I'd like to give you those three causes first. Let me explain it this way. There are two types of no's. There is the flat no in your face when you know that you've been pushing too hard on someone, that you've gone overboard with regards to presenting what it is that you think they should know. That type of no. And someone says, "Nah, I'm not interested." You know, or is this network marketing? Yeah, I'm not interested. All right, because they know that you're going to pressure them. There's that kind of no, that in the face rejection. That's the hard stuff. The other no is simply when someone has expressed some interest or has asked you a little bit more about it and has expressed some interest in it and has basically said, no, that's kind of really not for me. But that is part of the conversation. And it's not a kind of abrupt in your face. It's just that it really isn't for them. You know, they're happy with what they're doing, or they're more happy with what they're doing than wanting to change. There's a lot of reasons why people wouldn't do it. That does not feel personal. So if we can, one of the things we could do is, you know, our intention is to have a Q&A in a couple of weeks' time, and I think that would be more appropriate time to do something like that. In the meantime, I'd like to really give you some background, because this is more important than doing a conversation and talking about that. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's look at the three causes. The first cause, the number one cause, is presenting too soon. In other words, most present day sort of training programs teach you to think that because you have a solution, that you're the expert, then all you have to do is tell, present, educate, and over time, if you do enough times, people will listen to you. And, you know, can it work? Yeah, it can work. You know, if you have using that numbers game model, numbers game is still important. You still got to call people. You still got to make those calls, talk with people. But if you've got the time, energy, and the stomach to be able to do that, yeah, you can make it work. People do make it work. But the point I'm making is that if you talk about tell your story or present your product and talk about features and benefits and why someone should be doing it and so on and so forth, you know, whose point of view and needs are you, does it appear to your potential customers that you're focusing on? It's your needs, isn't it? And it's your need to make a sale. It becomes obvious, whether you know it or not, it's obvious. It's your need that's trying to be satisfied. And the question is that, you know, are they interested in you and your needs? And mostly they're not. So who are they interested in? They're interested in themselves and what they think. And if you explode out of the gate, trying to talk about and present your solution as you can. You know, have you ever noticed their eyes start glazing over or they come disinterested? Because what they're doing is they're working out their exit strategy. Right now, they're working it out. And they're already blocking you. They're not listening to you. So why is that? Well, it's because you're guessing at what to tell them. You know, here's an example. I went to buy a printer many years ago. It's a kind of a classic example. And the salesperson immediately started showing me all these different printers and telling about the different models on display with the different features and advantages. Now, his problem is that all the features and advantages that he was telling me about were not features and advantages to me. They were no relevance to me. All I was looking for was a sturdy printer that could churn out copies quickly because I was writing and wanted to read it over and so on and so forth. And so he lost me. He lost me completely. But lucky for him, he still made the sale because I didn't want to go anywhere else and I saw what I wanted because I knew what questions to ask him to find out which printer I wanted. The only thing was that came up was the choice between black or white. And I chose white because it went with my furniture. I mean, that was the choice. You know, two choices. One was fast printing and the other one was the fact of the color. And so if you guess, very rarely will you find a fit between what you're telling them, what you think they want or need, and what they actually want and why they want it, and even more importantly, many times, the deeper reasons of why they want it. Unless you ask them. There's a way of asking them. And so blindly guessing creates resistance. And that's only part of it. Using closing techniques. If you use any kind of closing technique, such as, you know, close soon, close often, it's going to create resistance. Because closing means that you're applying pressure on people to get them to do what you want them to do. That's what closing is all about, getting to do what you want them to do. Do they feel it? Yeah, they feel it. And if you do that, again, whose point of view does it appear to the other person that you're focusing on? You know, do you think people like being put into a corner and being pressured to buy or being persuaded to buy, externally persuaded to buy? Very few people do that, like that. I mean, you might find one or two who will accept it because they're ready, but the majority of people are going to push you back. You know, the law of karma, what you give is what you get. What you give is what you get. You push on people, they will push you back. How do they do that? They do that by resisting you. And it can work for you or it can work against you. And they do this by objecting to your bad behavior. That's what they're objecting to. It's not objecting to the fact that they don't have enough information because you're dumped a whole load of information. They're objecting to your bad behavior because you're not involving them in the conversation. And cause number three is, and I'm doing this in a presentational way, if you don't mind, just so we can move forward on this, is the third major cause is using overcoming objection techniques. Overcoming objection techniques is basically replying to your potential customers' questions, comments, or concerns. Okay, that's important. Questions, comments, or concerns as objections to be overcome using what are usually yes but answers. And here's a classic one. It's the old feel, felt, found model. Yes, I know how you feel, but many of my customers felt the same way until they found that blah, 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 blah. Finish it off, okay? Again, whose personal agenda is it? Appears to the other person you're focusing on. It's yours again. And the question is, do you really think that your customers, potential customers, really care about how others feel, felt, or found? And the answer is usually no. And this is a whole game in which, you know, it's a pressure tactic, external pressure tactic, and it's a game in which they sort of mostly win and you lose. Using overcoming objection techniques, for example, demonstrates that you're not listening. It demonstrates you're not interested in what they have to say or ask. It demonstrates that what they have to say or ask is not important. And so you break the conversation. They break away from you. As opposed to acknowledging any questions, comments, and concerns, and making it part of the conversation, and getting behind where it is they're coming from. And if you do that, and you start correctly, and you come from the right intention, it just becomes part of the conversation, and people will still continue to lean in. And if you know how to do it, you can actually help people to adjust or modify or change their thinking, change their beliefs, change their attitudes, change their prejudices, change what they believe in. But you have to be able to let go and have the ability to change yourself. So it's crazy. You're taught the techniques that actually create and cause the resistance you don't want, and then you're taught more techniques to get over the very things that you created in the first place. So there has to be a better way. And there is another way. When I say a better way, I should change that. It has to be another way. And there is another way. And it's a way that is based on principles, not techniques. And it's a way that can carry you for the rest of your life. It's a way that will enable you never to have to get another job again or dependent on other people. Because selling, if you know how to sell or how to help people buy, or how to sell the way people buy, you've got something for life.
I'm just thinking, whatever career you choose, it really is people. And if you learn sales skills, that's invaluable regardless of what you're in. I've often thought about, you know, if you were an engineer or an accountant or a lot of those supposed things that's all technical prowess and nothing to do with human relations, and you excel in those areas, there's no correlation between your ability and how you advance in that particular career path. But if you study just sell, people skills, you know, ability to love other people and relate, there's a direct correlation. It's all about relationships. And just real fundamental, just overall happiness, let alone success. It's all...
Yeah.
About relationships this is really good stuff.
It's really a matter of combining your product knowledge with your relationship knowledge. Think in terms of a bicycle. You've got a back wheel and you've got a front wheel. Your back wheel is, if you like, your product knowledge, and that's what most network marketers concentrate on is trying to get that product knowledge into somebody's mind. And the reality is that your front wheel, back wheel, front wheel, go the other way, back wheel, front wheel, your front wheel is your people knowledge, your relationship knowledge. And if you know how to combine the two, you can steer that bicycle in the direction that you want to go and at the same time direction in they want to go. And it's really a matter of understanding how to do that and to concentrate more on the people knowledge, the relationship knowledge, to be able to let people tell you. So it's not your story you need to tell. Your story might or might not be relevant. And when it's relevant, tell it. If it's not relevant, don't tell it. What's important is their story. And if you know how to ask them, and you come from the space of intention, they will tell you absolutely everything you need to know, whether there is a potential sale or partnership to be made. They'll tell you. And you can then make that decision as to whether you want to present and spend time following up needlessly because people don't answer your calls, they don't buy or don't follow up themselves. You can do all of that. You can preempt all of that so that each person you bring on board, whether it's a customer or a potential partner, are committed to make that change. Why? Because you've helped them do so. And I'll give you a clue here. If you know how to ask the right types of questions at the right time, and these questions are both logical and emotional, is that who's listening to their answers as you ask your questions?
Well, I'm just kind of going back. I guess when you were saying all this stuff, I just kind of mentally just kind of thinking of I guess some of the easiest people to tell is another self. And I'm just kind of was just kind of reviewing in my mind, just thinking back, where your field self found. I've had people that they pulled me through that, and I realized that was a technique, but it was so natural, and it was just kind of relating. I know how you feel. I feel your pain or whatever, but it just goes in, and this is what I found. And I think along that line, and then I was just kind of thinking back. When you were talking about how to do it wrong, just in my memory, I couldn't help but coming up. This is many years ago. We had big conventions, and that final flight to the city where the convention was, probably half the plane was excited people, and I just remember just feeling so uncomfortable because these people, they were so just barfing under.
They were just dumping on people.
They didn't get it. They were just so enthused, yeah. and you could just see the and it was happening multiple times simultaneously throughout the plane. All of these people, just and these people just and they couldn't go anywhere because they were in the air flying and just goodness how
let me pick up if I may on the feel felt sound and complete what I was going to say before. The feel felt sound is you can still use that as long as you have the conversation, as long as you do know how they feel, because if I say I know how you feel, think about it. Do I really know how you feel? Do you know how anyone feels? No one will know how anyone feels, because how we feel is deep inside of us, and very rarely will we actually tell you because it's very emotional. Sometimes it's hard to express. So even saying I know how you feel, okay, can evoke resistance. However, it's okay to use as long as you've had that conversation, what I call natural selling conversational dialogue. Let me go back to what I was asking earlier. Is that about asking questions? Is that I'm not talking about any types of questions. I'm not talking about manipulative questions that are designed to get the answers that you want. Because if you ask those questions, whose answers do you get? You get your answers, okay? And whose answers do you want? You want their answers, whether you like their answer or not. It's irrelevant what they say to you, because you can build on what it is that they're applying to. But here's the thing. When you're asking these logical and emotional questions, is that who else is listening to their answers? This is how people persuade themselves. They're listening to their own answers. And as they listen, they think about their present situation. And as they think, they feel. You cannot think without feeling. So they feel what it's like to be in their present situation. And as they do that, they're the ones who are evaluating the change. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to even talk about your products or helping them or anything like that. They're the ones who are evaluating what is going on in their present life. And the degree that a person will change their present situation, is based on two things. The degree of discomfort they're feeling in the present moment about their present situation, and the degree of desire to make a change. And your questions, if you know how to ask them, will help them do that. In fact, it's a service that you're giving. You're helping them look at where they are in their life to discover, in fact, whether there, for you personally, whether there is a solution that you might be able to offer them, whether it's to do with Nikan or something else. You have to come from that place because it might be something else. But the point is that you're helping them evaluate where they're coming from. So they persuade themselves to make the change to some degree or not. You don't have to do any external persuasion. They are doing the changing. And they were willingly open to you and let you know, even the strangers, you can go talk with strangers, they would tell you the most enormous or amazing amount of information that they would never tell anyone else. The reason they don't tell anyone else is because no one will listen to them. Because they're so eager to jump in with their solutions. And so that's really the key. That's the whole crux of it, is knowing how to ask the right types of questions at the right time. It's also about listening. It's also understanding about being on purpose. You know, the question is, you know, what's the purpose of a business? I ask that question. I say, what's the purpose of a business? You know, most people ask the purpose of business to make money, make profit. Like, is it? Yeah, it can be. But that's your personal agenda. It's not a purpose. Personal agenda. Where's the focus when you do that? Focus is on you. So change the intention into making it your purpose. Your purpose of your business is to help other people solve their problems and to help get what they want, need, or desire. That's your purpose. It's your purpose in life, is to help other people. And the way to do that is you have to let go of your own needs. You have to let go of your own need to make a sale. And it sounds counterproductive, but the moment you let go, as Deepak Chopra puts it, you know, the moment you detach, you're now into that area of abundance. Because the moment you let go of all your needs, it's like there's tons of needs. Need to be right, need to make a sale, the need to do whatever, okay? As soon as you let go of your needs, people let go of their needs as well. They reflect where you're coming from. And you now get an open conversation. So instead of 1 and 1 equaling 2, 1 and 1 equals 11. And dialogue is the way to do that. Natural selling, conversational dialogue requires you to detach from your own prejudices, your own ideas, your own beliefs, everything. Because the moment you do that, that's an energy that comes across. So that's another key. That's one of the principles, is to detach from your own needs. And the other principle is about, in fact, I've given you 3 principles already, you know, is about your purpose. So instead of getting up in the mornings and saying, okay, I need to call 10 people today and to increase my business and go and close as many people as possible, instead you just say, okay, I need to call 10 people today to find out if they have the types of problems that I might be able to help them solve. That's your mantra. And the moment you do that, feel the energy. The energy changes.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. You know, the idea is just to add value to other people and how can I serve. And yeah. Well, you were on a roll there. This just golden moment. That was good. Say some more, Michael.
Okay, so something is just coming to mind right now. And again, what we're going to do is, you know, I think you sent out a website page where people can, everyone on the call and anyone else can get hold of a couple of items, my book, which I wrote 20 years ago, and also an audio, which is 12 Ways to Start Effective Conversations Without Fear. And part of what it writes in there is this, you know, and by the way, this is neuroscientifically backed. You know, researchers in neuroscience and sales, you know, have put MRI scanners on people who were given a sales pitch, a standard sales pitch, and immediately their amygdala lit up. And the amygdala is where your fight, flight, or freeze response comes from. And that's immediately when you start building defenses. If, however, you approach people a different way, in the way I'm suggesting, their prefrontal cortex writes up. And this is where people get social. They relax. This is where you get the know, like, and trust from. And so behavioral scientists, you know, for many years, have demonstrated that there are basically 3 ways of communicating. One is about telling, which is about presenting and so on, where you're telling people stuff, pretty much in a sense what I'm telling you now, but trying to make it as rhetorical as possible, and it's relevant in the context. And what's proven is that telling, presenting, and educating doesn't work. It's the least persuasive. What I should say is actually not necessarily doesn't work, because it has its place, but it's the least persuasive way of helping people change from where they are to somewhere else. You know, you might see that someone needs to change. They might see it themselves. But trying to tell them that is least persuasive. More persuasive is discussion, debate, conversation, just general conversation. It is more persuasive. However, the problem with conversation and having an open conversation, you know, how to let's put everything on the table and be really frank about it. At the end of the day, no one's really frank about it because they're trying to keep back something that will create for them a winning situation. They won't be the ones who've made the impression. And so the problem with discussion and debate is that you still want to win. Whereas with dialogue, and this is talking about the Socratic dialogue, Socratic dialogue is the most persuasive way of talking with people and helping them change, is because you are not trying to persuade anyone to do anything. What you're doing is you're asking questions that allow people to persuade themselves. Socrates was really good at this. He wrote down nothing. He very rarely told people doing things. And yet, he moved masses of people because they started challenging their belief or understanding of the status quo in Rome at that time, and in Athens at that time. And so consequently, you know, I mean, he didn't event his life too well because of that, but he was a remarkable persuader. And so dialogue is takes a certain amount of courage because it requires you to really detach from your own need to express what you think is right. But instead of telling people what you think is right or what using your knowledge to tell people things, use your knowledge to ask questions. Turn your knowledge into knowing how to ask questions. And people will tell you and tell themselves what the answer is. It's magical. It is totally magical. Even right now, after doing it for 30, 35 years, it still bowls me over. I still sometimes, my jaw drops when I hear the flow of information, the whole blueprint just being presented in front of me of what it is that person is looking for, why they're looking for, the deeper emotional reasons. They lay it all around, out in front of me so that when it time comes for me to present, I know exactly what features are relevant to them. I know exactly how to express the advantages, and I know exactly how to express the benefits. And benefits are personal. Benefits, just to give you an idea. A feature is what is. An advantage is what it will do. And specifically, if you can talk about in terms of what it will do for that particular person, because you might sell exactly the same features. You know, duct tape is no different than how can I put it? The only difference between that is how people perceive it. And so you present it according to the way they perceive it. The benefit is how it personally helps them, how it personally affects them. That's really all about. And it's that deeper emotional side. And they'll tell you. And you just make your presentation based on that. 1, 2, 3. And they'll love you for it.
Well, this is fantastic stuff, and anytime you meet a new person, it opens up a possible whole new world, and a world that wouldn't have happened by that meeting, and so here we are together, and it's being recorded, so if you're watching it on YouTube later on, this is where we will post it on Magnetic Leaders, on the Call of a Leader playlist, and we'll put the link to your tools and the book and everything on the description of that. And so should we do this again in 2 weeks? Same time, same station?
Let's do this. And let's give people the ability to to get right behind it and understand the whole thing, and so that they're better prepared and to learn. For example, you know, you already sent out a website and send it out again. I got two things here which you'll find useful. It's my book, How to Sell Network Marketing Without Fear or Anxiety or Losing Your Friends, which will give you a lot of what I've been talking about, the background, and give you the questions to ask. There's also a chart in here that will lay it out for you. That's this one here, Natural Conversation Dialogue Chart. There's different types of questions. I've updated a bit since then, but we can bring that up in a Q&A. So get that. Also, 12 ways to start effective conversations without fear. And what it'll do is help you how to start conversations. It'll for example, start conversations with strangers, speaking with business associates, how to start cold calls, call referrals, how to call leads from a leads list, how to describe your products or services, how to describe what it is that you do. Here's a clue.
I'm not familiar with that, Michael. Is that a CD or what was that? Did you just show that?
These are audios. This is a book. Okay, so yeah. It's a downloadable book.
Uh-huh.
And these are two audios. Okay. One is sort of an introduction class that I recorded. And the other one, the CD, is the what I was just talking about. And
is the audio on Audible by chance?
No, this is downloadable directly from us. Normally, these two, normally I think it's $69, something like that. And I put a special thing on there for $47.
Oh,
so if you go to naturalselling.com/network marketing, you'll see it there. And if you want to send that out to everyone, Dave, then they can get that as well. But I suggest that $47 is a drop in the ocean compared to what you pay for a university course. And you can go and spend tens of thousands of dollars on a university course and come out and find yourself a decent job. The question is, do you want a job or do you want a lifetime skill that you never have to work again?
I like it. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much. And
you're welcome.
It looks like we've got put about an hour in, so I'm certain we could go a couple of more hours, but thank you so much, and let's keep in touch, and we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Weekend. Bye.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.